Welcome to the Critical Few Actions to Improve Your Business podcast. I'm John Downes, and I'm here to help you cut through the overwhelm and prioritize what matters most to improve your business. Let's get started and discover the critical few actions that have the biggest impact. Today, I'd like to introduce you to Grant Lingwood-Smith, who I've known since we first began our careers at Deloitte. Grant's often described as the man behind the CFO. He's been the group financial controller of many organisations, including Pacific Dunlop, Bristol Myers Squibb, MYOB, and most recently, Pexar. Grant, welcome.
Hey, John. How are you?
It's great to have you here. So, Grant, today I want to learn from your experience of helping organisations and their CFOs to support them to achieve sustainable, profitable growth. But first, tell me a bit about your journey. How did you first get into finance leadership? And what's been the key lessons that shaped your view of the role of the finance team?
Sure. So way back in the dark ages, I think when we were writing with quills, I started my career or even my studies at RMIT and then ended up doing an accounting degree and found I had a love or a passion for it, which is quite scary. Most people find accounting not too passionate, but I love it. And I found I wandered into businesses along the way, John, that I was actually passionate about. And that passion, I think, has stayed with me through that journey, starting way back with Pat Dunn, which was a huge conglomerate, watching it grow, change, and then disintegrate, moving into companies like Bristol Myers Squibb, internationally driven, then an MYB where I went through three private equity acquisitions and disposals. And then at PEXA, where I was dragged over there by the ex-MYB CFO to do another IPO, which is a bit of my sweet spot, as you say, the man behind the man slash woman to help through those sort of structural changes. So it's the top end of the finance that I think I'm drawn to.
Yeah, fantastic. And so when we talk about developing the organization to measure, learn and improve, it sounds technical, but it's actually about creating a learning business, one that measures what matters, reflects honestly, and adjusts quickly based on what the reality is. So from your perspective, what distinguishes a great finance team in this space?
Sure. Some of my views might be a little controversial for some of your listeners and that today in terms of I'll be a little left field because I'm a very simple man in terms of structure's important, systems are important, process is important. You've got to get them in, you've got to lock them down. But I have been at a few businesses where that's become almost paralysis by process. Right. So I think the good finance teams know that's important. Get some people in that can get your systems right, get some people in that can get your processes humming. What's more important for your senior finance people, and particularly for your CFOs who I've supported over the years, is to get out of that detail, is to not get bogged down. When a business needs you to be focusing on the next acquisition or they want you to be involved in demergers or they're looking at some way to grow their revenue streams, they don't want you, CFO in particular, spending their time making sure the monthly pack gets completed, all the boxes are ticked. A CEO, I think, is heavily reliant on their CFO that usually sits as the right-hand person to them and supports them in nearly all decisions they make.
Absolutely.
And I think the CFO's role and the finance team in supporting the CFO is key in terms of you almost put three or four hats. You're policing, which everybody hates to hear. We don't want the finance team policing. But what does that mean? When you're policing, it doesn't mean you're saying no. I hate any CFO or any finance team that just says no. You've got a customer. The customer is the CEO. The customer is your executive team. The customer is eventually your board or whatever. How do you enable them? How do you help them make the right decisions? Sometimes that is no, but no is not the first answer. And yeah. I think it's working through and supporting them. And one of the biggest things that I think a good CFO does, it holds CEOs and executives accountable. And it holds them accountable with returns on investments. You know, look, that's a great idea. You've seen another shiny toy. You want to run off and play with, that's fantastic. Let's talk about whether it's actually going to benefit the business, whether it's financially, structurally, future focused, whatever it is. And I think the CFO and the finance team play a major role in that.
So it's about support, but it's also accountability.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And poor CFOs don't handle that very well. They become yes people, and they think that's how they'll achieve success. And you can't be. You've got to be a fairly tough individual to know you can have. And it depends on the CEOs. We've all worked for some CEOs that their way is the highway. But you've got to find a way to make them understand that if their way is the highway and it's going to sink the ship, then maybe we do need to pivot. And that's a skill set. That's a real skill set. And I've watched good CFOs, and I'm trying to practice it myself, where I can stop someone and say, I understand what you're doing. I love what you're thinking, but you do realize that this is either strategically or wrong for us. And why? You've got to be able to back up your thoughts or take them down a journey of this just doesn't make sense. At the end of the day, they've got the decision. They've got the D in the old rapid, as we used to call it.
Yeah.
But you're there to help them understand the risk and you know, is it really the right decision for the business?
Yeah, I saw a horrible example of that just 6 months ago, 12 months ago, actually, having a look at a business that was aiming to grow, and their CEO was a real innovator, an ideas guy. And nothing wrong with an ideas guy. Unfortunately, he harnessed himself to a CFO who didn't apply that critical thinking you just described. And he felt that his view was to support the CEO to do whatever he wanted to do. But there's a difference between being a supporter of the CEO and helping him achieve what's appropriate to do, as opposed to just being an enabler. And this guy, over a period of 4 years or 5 years, his role as finance guy, call him CFO maybe, but not really. And so whenever the CEO had a great idea, he went out and found funding for it. And of course, that was great, except for the fact the CEO came up with another great idea 2 weeks later or 4 weeks later or 6 weeks later, and more funding was gotten as well. And so by the time we had a chat about this, you know, they were $6.5 million negative net assets. And each time they had a great idea, they just reached for a bigger shovel to dig a deeper hole. So I think the role of a good finance team in a medium business is definitely to be analytical and to validate and do some of the work and the research to actually underpin these innovations and these pivots and these acquisitions or demergers or new market entry.
Yep.
To figure out how to help make these things successful or demonstrate that, frankly, they suck. Technical term I learned at Deloitte.
I think just on that, John, I think it's a great example too, because in a lot of ways, if you've got too many people at full forward, to put it in a sporting analogy, and all you're trying to do is kick goals, that's fantastic. If the CEO's in the goal square and you've got the CFO running up to be with him all the time to say, yeah, this is great, then nobody's actually getting the ball to the forward line. No one's actually thinking about what's the journey and, of course, disaster results.
Yeah, disaster certainly can. So, Grant, let's start by just having a thinking about budgeting and tracking performance. Budgeting usually either creates rolling eyes or snoresville, but I think it's actually an important part of the fabric of figuring out how you're going to actually achieve your vision. Tell me about your perspective.
Sure. This is where I think I'm going to be a little bit controversial. So you and I have similar views on this, but we come at it from a different way. And this is what I love about the working environment, is that you can bring minds together, different minds, and still come up with a good solution at the end of the day. So yes, budgeting is important. I mean, anybody who understands how a business runs, you can't run a business without having some forecasts, some budgets, some goals, some targets. Goodness me. I worked at Pacton. Actually, I won't name names. We won't name Pacton. And at Pacton, they basically spent 6 months of the year preparing budgets, getting themselves set, understanding all of their businesses, how they fitted together, how they were going to drive the final number. Good thing was they had, I think it was 40 or 50 accountants that worked in their FP&A and budgeting team, which was fantastic, and all the costs that went with that, to create, you know, this magnificent model that at the end of the day, and I found this time and time again through my journey, came up with a number that quite often then tied into what the starting point was 6 months ago that the top down were looking for. And there might have been a bit of structure to it, which is fabulous. And they'd lock it all in and the reports would be fantastic and the presentation's awesome. And then a month later, when they sold off a business or they bought a new business or there was a change in the economic factors, It changed.
Yeah.
And it pivoted. And as it does, the economy we live in and the business world we live in, it's changing daily, week, month. You do need to have process. But again, one of my favorite sayings, paralysis by process around that is a disaster, because you're then not actually doing what you should be doing with a budget or a forecast, which is utilizing it to try and understand, okay, now that we're moving forward based on what we think is the baseline, and I always say we think is the baseline.
Well, it's only your best guess, isn't it?
It's your best guess. That's exactly. And this is
what every year it gets more educated. But then again, you know, how many people budgeted for COVID?
Correct. That's a great example. That's a great example. Because I try to teach my team, if you spend the eternity trying to bed down a budget and get it to a number that you think you can hang your hat on, well, great, that's your best guess. How about we spend half the time and get it to your next best guess, which is probably not going to be that different, and more importantly, work with the business so that when something comes up that throws that into mayhem, we actually know which levers to pull and what to look at and where it's actually falling down and what we need to do to adjust. And I think that's where the real benefit of budgeting and forecast comes. It's the tracking of it after you've got it in place to understand which bits need focus.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you create a budget process that's collaborative, useful, and but still got a bit of rigor to it?
Sure. So this will raise some eyebrows. I genuinely believe it starts with the executive and it starts with the CEO and an understanding of what do you want to achieve? What do you believe you want to achieve? And feeding into that, of course, is they'll have some teams that are looking at acquisitions and what that might drive and some synergies. And that's okay. That'll all come together and there'll be a high level understanding of, for the core business that as it exists at the moment, we want to see the growth in this area and we want to see being ridiculous, a 5% uplift in revenue or a 10% uplift in revenue. We also want to see an acquisition in this space and got the team working on that. So we should be able to see some additional revenue here or whatever. So they drive, they set the tone.
Yes.
With input from the right people, the acquisition teams and all of those. They then feed that down to the finance team, because this is where it gets tricky. Because they say to the finance team, we believe this is the targets of what we're thinking about. Now, then the CFO should be part of that process. Yes. So he comes on that journey anyway. Absolutely. So he can be going at the time, look, you know, you've got some ideas that you want to divest off some businesses. I can tell you that the market's down or whatever I'm aware of, you know, he can have some input. But once the executive decides that's where they want to head right now, today, might be different tomorrow, might be different in a week. That's when the finance team's role is to go out to the business, because we know what it's like trying to connect the top down and the bottom up is always, it's such a waste of time in terms of the nightmare of arguments and fights. Take that out of it. Go out to your business, go out to your market, head of marketing, go out to your head of sales, go out to your head of production and development and say, okay, here's the targets we're working towards. Let's business partner with you on how this, there's some cost reduction. Hey, there's a shock. What business has ever done that? How do we work with you on that? First reaction will always be, oh, we can't. I need every head I've got. I need every contract I've got in place. That's great. Okay, but here's the directive. This is what we're doing. And you work with them and you accept they're going to moan and you accept there's going to be some pain, but you go on the journey with them so that at the end of the day, you own it together.
Yes.
It's not that battle. It's not that finance is just telling us we're going to cut costs. No, we're bringing a direction from the executive that if it's cost cutting, which is always the worst to try and budget and forecast, if it's growth, it's sometimes hard. The sales teams and the marketing teams will also go up in arms. But at the end of the day, it's helping everybody understand, we know there's stretch. We know, you know, this is going to be difficult. We're all in this together. One of my sayings I love as well is everybody's just got to be in the boat rowing in the same direction at the end of the day. You can be squealing a bit. That's okay. This is really hard and the water's fighting against me. But at the end of the day, if you understand the targets and you understand we're all in it together and you measure people together as well. It's really important at the end of the day, and we can talk more later. You've got to link that then to performance reward, et cetera, so that they don't feel they're disadvantaged. If you get the fight that often happens in budgets, you waste time and energy and you won't actually achieve it. And no one buys into it at the end of the day. And
well,
then it's,
well, then it's just it's just a budget and as if it wasn't mine.
Correct. And I've seen it happen. And when that happened, you never achieve it. And when it doesn't, when you don't hit those achievements, everyone just disowns it and it's who cares. And, you know, and often in those situations, it's very detrimental to the business.
Oh, it's toxic. It's toxic to the culture of the business, as well as toxic to how the leadership viewed. and whether or not people want to be led by that leadership.
Correct. And probably one last thing I'd add to that is I've been in places, and I think PacDun was one of those back then, you know, 40 odd years ago. If you give too much autonomy to the bottom up, you already know they will create a budget that's way over cost, underperforming on revenue. We know that. That's just what we know. And then all that creates is tension. So you need to come to them, even though they hate it, with a bottom down number that we're targeting and help them then work to achieving that. It just takes out the initial, right, top down says we're going to make, you know, 100 million bottom line next year, and bottom up says we're going to make 30. And then you've just got months of angst. It doesn't.
Yeah.
Waste of time.
So what's the right balance between ambition and realism?
Good question. I think your ambition's got to come from obviously your executive leaders, et cetera, because they're the ones that hopefully should have the vision and the understanding of what they want to achieve. The CFO plays and wears the hat of realism.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so important, because to your point with the executive that just wants to buy, and the realism hat says, well, you know, I realize eventually we won't be able to service our debt and go broke.
Yeah.
It's that simple. And it's a role that a lot of CFOs don't like to play. So in that initial, and they've got to be involved. It's so many businesses that if they don't involve their CFO in those decision-making processes, only lose out, because at the end of the day, they go off on paths and directions that they can't pivot on. And we'll talk more later on about how important I think it is for businesses and CFOs to put their egos aside and pivot when something's not going right. And I've seen that cause disasters. They've got to be able to work with the CFO early so that they can avoid a lot of that failure down the, you know, if you make it too ambitious, obviously you set yourself up for failure.
Yeah, of course.
But you've got to have stretch, and then it's getting people to buy into that stretch, because they'll always feel like it's going to be hard to achieve. The troops in the trenches and the ones out there taking the bullets and crawling through the mud will always feel like it's a hard slog. How do you make them feel like they're incentivized to be a part of it, and that it is at least reasonably achievable? You know, you don't fool them. You don't say it's absolutely no problem. This will be a piece of cake. It's a conversation you have.
And I guess that's sort of where it comes to that important part about how do you stop it from being a purely financial or spreadsheeting exercise.
Correct.
Completely disconnected from the real operations.
Correct. You build an excitement in the business. You know, if it's a stretch, and that stretch is trying to find a business that's a synergy for us, and how do we buy that, and how do we, that is a stretch, and they don't fall on, they don't grow on trees, but it's getting the business excited about that opportunity, letting them understand what it does for them in terms of growth and what role they play in it.
Yeah, look, I think that's so important, but I guess the really key thing here is that and we agree entirely on this, you need a budgeting process, because it gives you a starting point.
It does.
It's a way of saying, okay, here's our vision. Here's what we're going to do over the next 12 months to get us closer to that vision. It's our best guess at this point in time. That guess will be out of date tomorrow, but it's our starting point. And we're using it to help us make decisions and focus our efforts over the coming year. And it will have to change, or we will have to actually make alterations to the way we go going forward. So
It's a great summary, John, because you do need it, and you do need to have something to measure yourselves against. And you've got to have the right personalities to realize when it does change, you don't kick yourself about it. You just pivot and think about, well, what's changed and what's next?
Yeah. Okay. So we've got a budget in place. So I guess then one of the crucial roles of a finance team is how they create and use management information. You know, in many medium businesses, reporting is either overwhelming or underwhelming. What have you found that makes the biggest difference between sort of numbers for compliance versus information for learning?
I'm becoming very conscious I'm going to come across as a very lazy accountant, because I keep saying, let's do less. So I'm going to say it again, let's do less. I've worked at a number of businesses where, again, paralysis by process, a CFO report, monthly CFO report, got to be done, internal, got to knock it out, became almost debilitating to actually getting anything else done. So at the end of the day, what ended up happening was the finance team and the CEO, a CFO sitting over the top of them, driving them to make sure that slide 7 was finished and slide 6 had the right colors and have we got the right font on the front? I don't think that's the company font. When you end up in that scenario, and I've been there, it is horrendously negative and detrimental. to the finance team itself, you feel like you're just a bunch of processes and it doesn't add any value to the business. So I've seen at PEXA, for instance, recently, a really good change with the changeover of the CEO and movement in the CFO as well. Well, they threw out the massive monthly pack. They went to what are the key things that we want to know? So a daily, you know, revenue snapshot, which is much more important.
Yeah.
So you can pivot and through the months try and change or understand, you know, and a big business like PEXA that's trying to move the Titanic a little bit, but, you know, it's sort of like a big boat going in one direction. But at least you're aware of, you know, things are not falling in the right place. And then a snapshot few pages. Now, the snapshot few pages will vary per business. This is the key thing.
Sure.
What does this business want to measure? Well, it's business A, business B, business C. It's different. Is it our revenue line? Is it our costs? Is it our recent acquisition and how it's integrating? Is it? It's got to pivot and it will change. Your CFO report's got to change every month. Not for the worse, not for, okay, adding more slides, replacing the slide. Don't measure BAU. Things that if your costs are under control, the CFO can take ownership of that and say to the executive or the, I'll let you know if costs are out of whack. I've got that. I'll give you a bottom line number of where it's at and whether it's in line with budget. You know, that thing we did 6 months ago that we just locked in, we've pivoted a little. More importantly, I'm going to let you know that, hey, that acquisition that we had recently that we thought we'd get synergies out of and we thought we'd see revenue growth, not happening. So here's the numbers on that so that the executive can make decisions around, all right, what do we do about it? You know, where, how do we focus on it? And I think they've done a great job. And you know, it's that area that it sits part of in the FP&A team. We provide support to it from the control, financial control team, of course. We make sure the ledger's finished and we make sure all the recs are done and all those sorts of wonderful things. But I love the fact that the new financial head of financial control there has changed that and the way they go about it. And I think it's really empowered the CFO and the executive to be more agile.
Yeah.
And I think that's key. You need it, but please measure the right things. A CFO pack that's got a page on the employee numbers comes in and says, you know, we had this many and now we've got that many. That's great. You know, and you had to go out to business and you had to track that down and you had to find out who'd left. And Frank only worked half a month. So we're using that as half an FTE. We're saying that's a full. Who cares? It's just until people and people costs become important for the business in a particular situation, then you do need a page on that.
So less is more.
Yep.
Pretty much from the perspective of, what are the things that we really need to focus on business by business? And how do we actually empower the executive team to spend their time making decisions on the things that actually matter? And as you said, if all you're doing is saying, well, actually, we ran the business okay this month. Well, in a small or medium business, that might be a real achievement.
Yeah.
But once they get past that point of actually do that pretty well every month than we have done for the last 24, then it should be more about, okay, so what are the things that really matter?
Correct. It's a very good summary.
Good, good. Are you looking to pinpoint the areas that will make the biggest impact on your business? Check out the Organization Performance and Value Diagnostic. This powerful tool lets you evaluate your business on multiple facets and provides email reminders to keep you on track. Head over to criticalfewactions.com.au and get started now. And so how should CEOs think about the information that their teams need versus what they want? What's the finance team's responsibility in shaping that?
Sure. It's always a tricky one. And often, when you talk about the CEO and the pressures they're under, I love watching really good CEOs at work, and I've seen some good and I've seen some bad. They're under pressure from a lot, and a lot of the time the pressure comes from the board these days. We understand the boards, particularly of listed entities and you know, mid-range entities. There's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
There is a lot of responsibility, and they're held accountable now more than they used to be, and there's nervousness. You know, I see it in the PEXA board now in terms of, well, you know, we cross this or we cross that. I read in the paper yesterday that there's a, you know, they're looking at this and they're, yep, absolutely. All the right questions. The CEO often can get caught up in the, okay, we need to give the board this, we need to give them that, and we'll pull this together and we'll look like we're a great business. That's good. That's great. The CFO's role then becomes managing that funnel and trying to help them understand that, look, Why don't we quarterly give the board, or even, you know, half yearly, a snapshot on these things that are not that important to the business, are the things they're going to be really measured on, and try and manage that flow so that we're not doing it monthly. We don't have those big, huge packs that flow up and then end up in front of the board or wherever they end up, or in front of the executive, because often the executive's the same ilk.
No one's ever going to read the damn things anyway.
Correct.
Or because exactly. They see them so often, they don't pay attention to them anyway.
It's a fabulous, exactly. And that's what used to annoy me so much, to complete those massive CFO packs that just, you know, no one read. You'd rather they got a report that said, look, here's the report. If you want to read it, it's there for you every quarter. And it does tell you that we've met these risk analysis, and it does tell you that we've complied with this and all of those things that you want to make sure. But more importantly, here's some information on how we're tracking as a business against the budget and the forecast. Here's the latest acquisition, or how it's going. Here's some thoughts that, you know, at the moment, the mergers and acquisitions team have put together a slide on some potential acquisitions that you might want to look at. And it focuses them a one pager. I mean, I know what it's like. I talk too much, as you know, John. It's one of my lovely traits. And I try to make sure when I'm presenting to someone senior to me, I try to dot form it.
Yeah.
Because if I don't, I lose them. And it's the same when you're reporting.
Yeah.
Once you give them those long, wordy, thick packs, they file them, they feel secure, they feel comfortable because somebody's done them, but they don't realize that on about the third page you wrote, hey, by the way, we've just hit an iceberg and the Titanic's about to go down. Let me know if that's a problem.
Yeah. We should have been in 24 point on page one as the first, second or third bullet point, possibly after our safety history.
Correct.
And so when you put that sort of system in place, what happens to the culture of accountability in the business?
I think it goes through the roof. Mm-hmm. I really think, because the CFO then delegates down to their systems finance team. Hey, I need the right systems. I need the right processes. I just need that to work. I need payroll to function, accounts payable to function. I need, please, I don't need to be involved. I want to be involved in that. So that happens. Yeah. And they get ownership and they get that right and they feed the right information. Then what happens is the CFO can then take themselves out of the detail.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than a CFO that's drowning in detail. And we'll talk a little bit later about potentially why CFOs fail. And if they're in that, out of that detail, it then means they can sit with the CEO and the executive and advise them on the things that are key and need to be focused on, and therefore everybody becomes accountable for what's important to them at the level they're paying for.
Yes.
The worst case is when the CFO is accountable for, did we get in our recent accounts payable reporting packet? That's not what a CFO should be accountable for. He should be accountable, or she should be accountable for, are we meeting budget? Are we going above and beyond? Are we managing, you know, what we need to? And are we identifying the issues and the challenges and then making the right decisions on how to pivot on them? And I think that's where the accountability for a CFO becomes more exciting.
Yeah.
I don't think any CFO genuinely wants to get bogged down in the day-to-day. They need to be across it, but they need good teams. And I think a really good CFO employs good people behind them. And I think that's why I've loved being part of teams and being the right-hand person to a good CFO, because I've once been described a couple of times as almost like a Rod Marsh, which will be a reference that's too old for most people, but just a safe pair of hands.
Yeah.
So if you've got safe pairs of hands that can get those things done, the accountability goes up the chain. We're accountable, so I know I'm accountable for getting the annual report out. The CFO doesn't care. Just get it out. Just, it's numbers. He wants to worry about the investor presentations that come out of it. He wants to worry about the messaging. He wants to worry about how they sell the business to, you know, the shareholders, the public, the investors. And I think the accountability then lands in the right place.
Yeah.
Because when a CFO is accountable for too much, then you actually don't put the right focus in the right place.
Absolutely. So now let's talk about performance measures, KPIs, OKRs, yep. Which would be flavor floats your boat. What are your thoughts on when and how these can be useful? And
yep.
And do you see this as being important in your experience?
I do. I've probably, once upon a time, I thought they were a lot of fluff. That's only because I'm forever looking for not doing work. But yeah. I think over the years, I've grown to embrace them and understand that they're a very key part. And PEXA, I think, has got a really good process at the moment where from the executive and the CEO, there were 10 solid deliverables, OKRs, goals that they want to achieve as a business.
Yeah.
Not too many. You know, once 10's even almost too much, you know, you probably out of that 10, they've probably got 3 or 4 really key ones, whatever they are. But once you set that at a high level, again, it's a bit like the budget forecast. And it's just the reality that we pay these people good money to lead businesses. So let them lead.
Yes.
Once they've done that, then the finance team then works with the business to understand what each of our deliverables are to contribute to those OKRs, whatever they are.
Yeah.
And it's different for everybody. And what I don't like and what I'm happy to see is not happening at PEXA, I don't want the accounts payable clerk to have to link their deliverables or their OKRs to the businesses if they can't. We all know that getting all the creditors paid is important. Whether it's going to drive any of the deliverables at the top, probably not. It will in some way. But again, move away from the process. Keep it simple. Just make sure they're aware of them. They know what the business is driving towards. More importantly, they know what their 2 or 3 key OKRs or deliverables are, KPIs, to get their job done so that it doesn't detract from the focus. And then as you go up the chain, it becomes a little easier. You know, when you get to a certain role, the head of marketing, obviously, they're going to be able to link to 2 or 3 or 4. And it becomes less of a process, but more of an understanding of what is, to your point earlier, what is my accountability in delivering these? If accountability is 0 or 0.5, it's okay. That's okay. Don't create a process that says, oh, you've got to link this to one of these or, no, no, just be aware of them, know they exist and know that doing your job to the best of your ability will help deliver those. That's all. And then up the chain becomes important for each party to understand how they, and what they've done well as well is PEXA then assigned individuals to manage each of the OKRs.
Right.
So there's people within the business who are actually ultimately responsible for. And therefore, I like that too, because, you know, so often there's lip service to these things and you get to the end of the year or you get to a reporting, get in a room and did we hit this OKR or did we hit this deliverable? No. And in a poor business, luckily I haven't worked for too many of those, but in a poor business, they suddenly go, well, why did that happen? It's quiet, silence. Nobody actually knows because nobody was actually really measuring it. Nobody was actually really keeping an eye on it and nobody had accountability or ownership for it. So I think they are important. And I think it's interesting so late in my career that seeing the way PEX is done, it probably has brought together all sorts of different processes. Some I've loved, some I've hated. But I think they've got it really right in this latest sort of, since the new CEO's come on board, this latest rollout of these.
Fantastic. And talking about OKRs, KPIs,
yep.
Your thoughts around OKRs and what they're there to achieve, tell me a bit about your perspective.
Sure.
And maybe how it's actually been rolled out at PEXA. Is that something they've always had or?
No, they've always had it, but I think it's been too much of a process as opposed to an actual driver of success is what I think it should be.
So explain OKRs and how you feel that they fit in.
Sure.
Mm.
So I think in a business like PEXA, they're basically defining for you what they believe we want to achieve and how we want to go about to achieve it. Obviously, the detail comes through the people that own it, et cetera, but it gives you goals, it gives you drivers, it gives you pegs in the sand.
Yeah.
If you don't have that, then the executive goes off and chases shiny toys.
Sure.
You know, we've seen it a million times. And
a really good focus tool.
It is a fantastic focus tool because businesses forever are just, they're caught by bright things. And if you don't have... Now, what's genuinely going to change the business? What's genuinely going to make it better in the next 6 months or in the next 12 months? It'll pivot. It will change. It will be, and it's a little more inflexible than budgets and forecasts. They've got to be pivoting daily, weekly. OKRs, you need to lock them in for 6 months or a year and you need to drive towards them. But you also need to understand if something goes very pear-shaped on one and it's no longer, you know, if COVID comes and something's now, you've got to throw it out the door. You can't say, no, it's our OKR for the year. We're going to stick to that. And I think what it does is it allows you to start measuring people as well because you then start to link your LTIPs and your bonuses and those sorts of things to the deliverables that the business is driving towards. Again, what do you achieve? Everybody's in the same boat, rowing in the same direction.
Mm.
Everybody wins. I'm just such a big believer in that, John, of like if everyone feels like they've got skin in the game in whatever way that is, and OKRs drive that, I think, because it's a clear, you know, it surprises me, often surprises me because I'm not as switched on often as others around me in terms of what's important to people. But a lot of my junior staff have over the years, what's the business trying to achieve? They love to know what it is. What are we trying to do? And I'm surprised by that. I often think they just want to turn up, get paid, do their job well, go home. But it's quite interesting that it means a lot to people in the business, and it gives them focus. And it actually tells them that when you get in the boat and we all row together, this is what we're aiming for. And I think it was Tim Reed back at MYB used to talk about at the end of your 6 or 7 or 8 OKRs or your goals or your KPIs that you're measuring on and driving towards, what is it we want to achieve by doing those, and what is it on the horizon that we're sort of rowing towards?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting. I genuinely believe people don't just come to work to do their job. They want to be part of something bigger.
Yeah. It often surprises me.
They want to be part of something that's bigger than them, that they can share in making a contribution. You know, maybe I'm just projecting, but
No. And
I think that's just the way that most people are. And we all have that need as a species that is largely collaborative.
Yep. And there's a pride factor. It took me a while to sort of realize that, because there are obviously always individuals just happy to, they want to come, do a good job, get paid, go home.
Yeah.
But that pride of, you know, I know what PEXA stands for. I know what MYB represents. I mean, I remember, gosh, the hardest journey we had at MYB was when Xero came on the front, and the marketing they did was fabulous, and the way they attacked the market and attacked MYB to try and keep the team's positivity up. Yeah. And what the drive was, because MYB is a fantastic business, still is. But when you're facing a very smart, savvy marketing beast like we faced with Xero.
With a fantastic distribution channel, absolutely amazing.
Exactly. And you're right. That's when you realize just how much your team members and the people that work for a company do love it. And they used to hate going to barbecues. It used to be everyone's pet hate. And you know, if you work for, I look for MYB, oh yeah, I hear Xero's taking you over. And you know, they're not really, they're a very good company, and we're sort of in slightly different space. It's interesting. That's when you do learn about passion. And I think you're right, John. And I think I'm finally realized that after all these years, that once you get people in on the story and understand that they're part of it and they feel connected, it's that it does drive. It really does drive positivity, and there's massive benefits to positivity. You know that when people turn up to work in a positive frame of mind.
Makes a complete difference.
Does.
Every business loves the idea of measuring performance, but frankly, few do it particularly well.
Right.
How can a finance team help define meaningful metrics and different levels, group, function, product or service? Common mistakes you see when teams try to figure out how to set KPIs.
I think one of the most common mistakes is that it becomes just a process, and you know, somebody sends out an email from HR saying, you know, you need 5 OKRs or KPIs, get them in the system.
Yeah, great.
Fabulous. So people do that because they then find out later on if they don't, then they're not eligible for 25% of their bonus. Completely the wrong process. And I've been at places that have done it, and it's really, it disenfranchises people. Mm. The right businesses, I think, do what PEXA is doing at the moment. Once you have your 10 high deliverables, it's then working, getting the finance team to work with the individuals that are driving each of those to understand, first of all, who's relevant to each of them.
Yeah.
So which, you know, it's no use saying to them, it's like what I said to you, the finance team needs to be connecting to some of the top. If you're not really going to drive it, don't. It's not a tick the box process. So where finance comes into that is they go out, they meet with this 10 odd people who own these OKRs at PEXA. They understand what they believe. And sometimes you have pushback on that. You know, I think marketing will contribute to this. I think the product and development team will contribute to this. I think procurement will contribute to this.
Yeah.
CFO or the finance team or the business partner says, why do you think procurement will contribute to this? And then there's a chat and you've got to be able to sort of say, well, I don't think they're going to contribute as much as potentially risk will. Have you thought about the risk team in this? Once those chats have occurred, and as always, they should be robust, there should be push and pull. And then at the end of the day, you know, the person who owns the OKR makes the D. That's okay. We've had our say. Sometimes you can influence them. Sometimes you can't.
Yeah.
You then have to go and work as business partners, and the FP&A team do it well. I've seen this done well in a number. Just say, okay, here are the genuinely key KPIs or OKRs that we should be measuring you on. And you might be involved in a couple of the different high level, and then you might have your own. Let's not have BAU ones. I just, please, I really do need you to turn up and be the payroll manager, I'm expecting you to pay for it. Let's not have that. But we've got an acquisition that we need to integrate the payroll system. So one of your OKRs and KPIs is how quickly can we, you know, get them onto the payroll system? Here's the deadline. Things that matter, things that count, things that, you know, are measurable. And I think that's where it becomes more engaging for people.
Yeah, definitely.
And they're happy to be measured against it too if they own it. Oh, like a payroll manager is happy to be measured and driven by a KPI or an OKR that actually is tangible, and they know that they're contributing to it and they have influence on it. There's nothing worse when you're being measured on something that you actually have no influence on.
Mm. Yeah, I think there's also another dimension, and it came up yesterday afternoon. I was with the CEO and he was looking at, okay, so what are the key elements of his dashboard that he wanted to be able to see to see how the business is actually operating and what matters? And, you know, we had a starting point, which was sort of a bit of a mishmash of high-level KPIs and then sort of some low-level KPIs, things around, okay, well, what's the uptime of our robotic welding fleet versus things like what's our forward cash flow looking like, because it's looking pretty lumpy on a seasonal basis and so on. And so we spent quite a bit of time actually starting to look at it more from the point of view of, okay, so if we're looking at each of the teams across the business, whether it be finance, operations, HR, procurement, logistics, supply chain, installation, then what are the key metrics that actually tell us if that team's actually operating well or not?
Yep.
And that completely changed the sort of the landscape of what this dashboard might look like. What are your thoughts around that?
I think that's a really good approach, because it sounds like he started with too much of a spaghetti sandwich, as I call it. There was just too much information and none of it focused.
Yeah.
Did you get to a point where you were going to drive down to each of the team's metrics around ensuring that they are, as you say, delivering on the things that are important to the business? Or was it a match between that and also just having KPIs, making sure that they deliver on what they just need to do to make it work in their areas? Was it a mix in the end?
At the end, from his perspective, it was very much around what were the things that he was expecting of the teams. For the business as usual stuff, that was something that they needed to manage themselves effectively.
Perfect. Then I think we're on the same page. You can certainly have them with their own metrics and making sure people get paid and making sure. I think if I'm in a business division and I'm given, you know, metrics that I know if we achieve are going to help us deliver and improve business, I'm more empowered by that.
Yeah.
And I'm also held accountable for that. So I think that's the absolute right approach.
So, you know, when we talk about alignment there, you know, when alignment happens, what are the signs? What tells you that the business is actually measuring what matters?
Yep. I think what you see is faster change.
Mm.
And the reason you see faster change is if the business has taken the noise out of it, and that's just happening, then really all that's occurring is there are five or six very solid things that the business is keeping an eye on, whether it's a future acquisition or an investment, or it's the growth in this particular area, or it's the synergies out of this latest acquisition, whatever it is. And if you're measuring those things and you're tracking those, what you'll see in a very good business is the ability to change direction quickly.
Yeah.
And make decisions faster. And I know that's telling people how to suck eggs, really. That's what should happen. But it doesn't in so many businesses.
It actually happens rarely.
Exactly. Because you're too busy still reading the reports, or, you know, that CFO report that 4 months ago told you we had an issue, but we didn't really read page four, or we didn't really address it. And what I love is that should drive, doesn't always, an executive team, including the CEO and the CFO, that will park egos and actually make tough decisions. Because often what can come out of that is, and I saw a great example of this over the last few years, let's say you've got an acquisition that you've bought because the information at the time was it would be great for us in terms of cross-selling into our current clients. We saw great synergies. We buy it, we bring it in, we don't embed it appropriately because we didn't have the right structures in place and the right metrics. Now we're a couple of years down the track and we've got the right measures and processes in place, and you're now suddenly measuring this. And suddenly on the front page coming into the executive is, this business that we've acquired is failing And not only is it failing, we now believe we can no longer achieve what we thought we would. Now, the old businesses, A, wouldn't have known that that was even happening, and it would have just kept going in the background and lost in the wash of the bigger business. The middle range business would have been, okay, that's awful. Let's just plow more money into it and let's just try and do something to save. What I saw was an executive that could stop, even though they were the ones that bought this business, get a team to analyze whether this was the case. So, you know, obviously you have someone go off and go, when the team came back, just they were able to focus on it because they knew about it. They presented a report saying, this business will never deliver what we thought it would. We need to get rid of it.
Yeah.
And they got rid of it. And that's hard. That is really hard because the CEO and then the CEO and the executive had to say to the investors, we thought this was 2 years ago the right thing. We didn't implement it as well as we should have. And it's now failed and we're not going to spend any more time or money on it. We're going to move on and we've sold it at a loss.
Yeah.
I think that was for me a great example of where you benefit from truly understanding what's going on in the important parts of the business.
Yeah.
That's where that reporting really drives and you see change and you see, because it's so easy for executives to just put their heads in the sand and everything just flows and we'll find another shiny toy and we'll do something different. So I think you see faster decision making and you see change happen in the business really quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me your thoughts around reflecting and replanning. So we know that pretty well the minute that you sign off on a budget, that it's wrong because it's our best guess. And hopefully every year as we do our next best guess, we get better at it. But the simple reality is there's a whole bunch of things outside of our control that we can't necessarily factor in. And so as a result, you know, those things are going to change. So tell me about your thoughts around reflecting and replanning, because quite often this seems to be skipped over because everyone's too busy in the whole execution phase.
Yeah.
But the best organizations build reflection into their rhythm. What does a healthy reflect and replan process look like from your experience?
I think you just answered your own question when you said they build it into their rhythm. That's absolutely correct, because what you don't want, and I used to see it, let's go back to Paul Pack Dunn, who I love dearly, but you know, was a slow movie conglomerate. It went through that process. Its idea of reflection and rebudgeting was, you know, the 6 months that we've just spent on that budget and we've locked it in, let's just sit and we'll measure that for 6 months. And then in 6 months, we'll start to do another 6 month process for the next year. And that'll be our time to reflect on.
Painful and pointless.
Exactly. And it was slow moving and it actually is detrimental to the business. And I mean, you know, I'm being a bit cynical, but you've got to be agile, as we've talked about. I think we've touched on this and all we're pulling together now is all the threads. If you've got a quick, fast, clean budgeting forecasting process that gives you your benchline.
Yeah.
If you're not bogging the business down with over-reporting and you're reporting on the things that are key within that budget, you know, and those things are flowing on at worst a monthly basis into the exec, you know, some execs meet weekly, you know, PEXs does that, then your reflection and your rebudgeting is, to your point, it's intrinsic in what you do. So this was where our bench line was at the 30th of June. By September, we're still keeping 80% of that, but that particular section of the business that hasn't grown its revenue, we thought it would. We've already pivoted. We've appointed an individual within the business to drive, looking at that, understand what's not working, come back. And so you're already, to your point, intrinsically built in this ongoing continuous rebudgeting, this ongoing continuous reflection, because a great example of when you don't do that is what happened in that last example I gave. When you buy a business, and I think this is one of the greatest failings of businesses who love shiny toys and buy a business and they bring it in, they do not put the effort and the energy into employing a team of people that will embed it. There's going to be great synergies. There's going to be, wow, we're going to sell it into our clients. Particularly if you've got an internal mergers and acquisitions team, they love to sell the story and they're often incentivized on how many acquisitions they do. There's a conflict. So we buy this business and it just gets, I call it, thrown over the fence.
Yeah.
And everybody's doing them. Mm-hmm. and everyone's doing their BAU and trying to do everything else, and that's there. If you're not measuring that, if that's not one of then your KPIs or your OKRs, if that's not one of the things you're reporting on, then it'll be 2 years, as I said in the last example, when finally somebody goes, excuse me, just want to point out that this business, it's not working. Whereas if you've got the right teams in place and the streamlined reporting and the highlights, 3 months down the track, you find out we're not getting the sell-in, or we're not finding the synergy savings, or we're not, and why not? And then they can appoint somebody who'll get onto it and make the right decisions. So I think it all neatly ties into that example where it's a disaster if you say, you know, yes, we'll look at that in a, you know, couple of years. If it's your key drivers, you can't be doing that. You've got to be finger on the pulse.
Yeah. So how can a finance team then create the conditions for honest reflection without turning it into a blame game? What are the key questions leaders should ask at the end of each cycle?
Yep. I love, to me, a really strong leadership team supported by a finance team does not have any egos around this. So the finance team needs to be that support and that conduit in those discussions around, let's identify what's gone wrong.
Yeah.
Let's try and understand why it hasn't happened. Then let's talk about, and I love this saying, what's next, not what was. Once you've identified that, businesses that, and look, luckily I haven't worked for too many businesses like this. If you get bedded down in going out and the first thing the CEO does is says, all right, well, who bought this business? Frank, right? So let's go, let's march Frank to the front doors and we'll put a bullet in him, throw him out on the street and we'll set an example.
Yeah.
That's not great. Frank had a good reason at the time for this acquisition. He was supported by a number of businesses. Yes, let's identify what went wrong so we don't do it again. I always say to my team, we'll make mistakes. I say to them, I'll make many more mistakes than you will. Let's identify them because we're having a go at things. We're trying things. Let's make sure they don't happen again. Let's put process and structure in place to ensure they don't. But more importantly, the finance team becomes the conduit to say to the executive, yep, we'll work out what's happened, what's gone wrong. We'll work with the business. We'll give you a paper on that so that we can then deal with that. But more importantly, they focus the executive on the more important factor of what's next.
Yeah, what's next?
Absolutely. What's next?
And I guess that sort of, you know, all of this discussion then leads us to the point where, you know, a really good finance team knows their shit. They've got their processes in place. They run the finance function of the business well. Our businesses, as usual, is an essential part of the fabric of the business, the infrastructure of the business. And that allows the finance leaders and the CEO to then make good, well-informed decisions on a regular basis that is based on current information so that they can think about what next.
Correct. We're enablers. You're just enablers.
Yeah. If you really want to kick off your strategic planning and work in a supportive environment with other CEOs and leaders, the CEO Masterclass in Strategic Planning and Implementation is for you. This 10-month small group course helps you craft your strategic plan, present it to a group of peer investors, and develop a habit of monthly implementation. Our waitlist is open now at criticalfewactions.com.au. You've worked in organisations with a variety of different CEOs.
Yep.
How would you describe the features or the characteristics of some of the best CEOs that you've worked with from a finance team perspective?
Sure.
And what do you think are the characteristics of a good partnership between a finance team and a CEO?
Yep.
First, what do you think about a good CEO? And then secondly, that partnership.
Yep. I think you touched on it really early where I could never be a CEO. Why? I could never be a CEO because I don't have that entrepreneurial, visionary, strategic thought process.
Yep.
Because that's what they need. You are leading a business. You are leading people. You are leading a boat that we're all in and rowing. And that CEO, a good CEO, intrinsically just has to have that. So I think that's just a given. But sadly, I think a lot of people think that's enough. So I've got some great ideas. I can see shiny toys like your example earlier. Let's buy another business. This will be fantastic. I think you need that just to be a CEO. And I think good CEOs just have that. Well, no, I won't say good CEOs. CEOs have that. Good CEOs have a couple of things that I think are far more important. They actually have an ability to surround themselves with quality people, whether it's the CFO or the head of HR or the marketing lead or the product and development, which is always so important, that they will take counsel from.
Yeah.
All CEOs know it all.
Yeah.
And sadly, I'm a big believer in karma, and they don't all get the karma they should because they just bulletproof. Oh, the business went bankrupt. I'll just walk away and 2 years later, I'll pop up as the CEO of another business. It irks me, and it irks me a lot. Accountability is that, okay, I need counsel. We talked about it earlier. Mm. You know, your CEO can be in the goal square and kicking 20 goals. If we need to say we need to play slightly differently or there's risk, they need to be able to listen and they need to be able to take that counsel on board. Egos, which are so important and intrinsically part of a CEO, can be their Achilles heel.
Yeah.
And I asked our new CEO, because I asked the tough questions, everyone else says to me, well, I can't say that. When he joined us a couple of months, nearly a year ago now, I suppose, I said to him, are you the CEO? And this was he's saying I'm open to any questions. I said, are you the CEO that in 8 months' time can stand in front of this group and say, hi, I've made 5 decisions. Here are the 3 that worked and here are the 2 I got wrong and what I learned from them and what I'll do differently or will do differently next time. That to me, if you are that CEO, and of course he said, yes, I'm that CEO, I can do that. The proof will be in the pudding.
Yeah.
That CEO is the one that will intrinsic, at the end of the day, be the best leader of the business.
Yeah.
Because you will not get everything right and you do not know everything. And as much as these are very often very intelligent individuals, they need the rails around them and they need to take counsel to make sure they make the best decisions as often as they can. And they'll still make mistakes. Absolutely. How does a CFO play in that space? Like we talked about earlier, you've unfortunately got to be the police sometimes. ROI, ROI, ROI. That's a great idea, John. Really love what you're thinking. Yes, you can stroke the CEO's ego. That's not a problem. Do you look good today, John? Just thinking though, on this acquisition, where do we think we're really going to see the revenue streams come through? And then even say to them, give me a day or two. I'm just going to put a couple of things together, or a week or a month, depending on how big the project is, and come back to them and give them evidence of why I don't really think this is going to work and why. Or, yep, no, I think it can, but we're going to have to do these. If we do buy this business, we're going to do this. You have to play that role. And at the end of the day, you've got to be tough enough to know that some CEOs, poor CEOs, will go, no, I know better. We're just going to keep kicking the ball down the middle to me and I'm just going to keep marking and kicking goals.
Yeah.
And eventually when you get a good CEO, he realizes that may not be the way every time. And in fact, we're actually going to share the ball around on the half forward line. We're going to cross over and then sneak it to him in the pocket.
Yeah. Gotcha.
It's not rocket surgery.
Yeah.
We all think and we love to believe that what we do is so complex and so difficult. And when I talk to my own teams and CEOs need to take bits sometimes, I say to them, yep, I've done listings, I've done IPOs, I've done private equity acquisitions, disposals. They're all pretty intricate and they're all pretty difficult. But if you do 1 or 2 or 3 and you learn, then you'll do them too.
Yeah.
So we're just going to realize it's not rocket surgery. We like to think it is. Those good CEOs will actually take counsel. They'll still make tough decisions. They're accountable. But I think we're seeing more of those these days. I think the old cowboys are less prevalent and that's a good thing for business.
Yeah, I think you do right.
So final question, Grant. If a founder or a CEO is listening right now and thinking, I need to strengthen the finance team, this part of my organization, critical few actions that they should start tomorrow if they did nothing else.
Yep. Build a good team. It's just foremost. They'll have enough connections. They'll know enough people. Get a good CFO in, someone that's quality, someone that's got the runs on the board or certainly heading in the right direction. And then empower them to build the right team underneath them so that they can then be the right-hand person to the CEO. It's fundamental. If the CFO is spending too much time managing the staff or managing the processes or in the detail, the CEO will not get what they need from them. So get the right team in place. That's really important. Secondly, when you start working on your reporting structures, keep them simple, keep them focused. Don't get bogged down in, oh, I read this fantastic book and the book says, oh, we've got to produce these CFO reports and they've got to be 30 pages. Just keep it simple. It's not rocket surgery. When you're not doing it for the first time, what's important to your business, get your CFO on board and identify that. And then I think the last thing is just take out what I think is paralysis by process. Don't have yourself ticking boxes and dealing with things that are outside of your area of focus. Make sure you have everybody accountable at their level for the things that are important to them, which will allow you to be accountable for what's important to you.
Fantastic. Grant, this has been really thoughtful and thought-provoking. It's been a delight to chat with you, mate. Thank you so much for your time and for sharing your insights.
It's been my pleasure, John. Thanks for asking me to do this. It's not something I thought I would have been asked to be involved in, but I know you yourself have been involved in many businesses and contributed to so much of what's going on in the industries. Thank you for making the time and letting me chat to you today.
Thanks for listening to the Critical Pew Actions podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and grab the downloadables from the show notes. And if you found this episode helpful, I'd really appreciate it if you share it with your peers and your team. Stay focused and take action. The Critical Few Actions podcast, including show notes and links, provides general information only and is not individualized business advice, nor can it be relied upon as such. You must take responsibility for your own advice, decisions, and actions.